SBS Radio.
Wadamooli, I'm Kerry Lee Harding and this is NITV Radio. And it's time now for our weekly Science and Technology segment with Ray Johnston, Editor of Science and Technology at NITV. It's that time of the week again where we check in and talk all things science and technology with Ray Johnston, Science and Technology Editor from NITV. Good afternoon to you, Ray.
Good afternoon, Kerry Lee. How are you?
I'm well, sis. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I had a pretty relaxing weekend. I think it was much needed after the big week that came before it. So I'm feeling refreshed and renewed, which is lovely.
That's lovely. And I know you do get out and about hiking sometimes as well, sis. Did you manage to do any of that or a bit more relaxed than that?
It was a bit rainy this weekend, but I was still up on Darugan Gundagara country, which was beautiful, and just enjoying all the bird life and wildlife from a dry distance this time. I'm not a fan of hiking in the wet. It gets a bit dangerous for me, so don't want to slip over while I'm out there. But it was a very nice weekend. Still got out there, out of the city, which is good.
Sounds lovely, sis. Human activity, I understand, is forcing animals to move 70% further to survive.
Yeah, so for the first time, scientists, they've calculated the global impact of human activity on animal movement. Now, we know that logging and, you know, urbanisation and development, we know they can have big impacts on wildlife, and they do have big impacts on wildlife. But this study, and it's from scientists at the University of Sydney and also Deakin University, it shows that hunting and military activity and aircraft use and other types of recreation as well, that they can trigger even bigger changes in animal behaviour. And it can lead to reduced animal fitness, lower chances of survival, reduced reproductive rates, you know, things like genetic isolation, which can be bad for breeding and the continuation of species in the long run, and even local extinction. And this is because the movement is critical to animal survival, but we can stop that from happening with all of our activities. So you've got animals that are fleeing or avoiding humans, that are travelling further to find food or mates, or having to find new shelter altogether to avoid humans or predators. Now, one of the interesting things that came out of this is that, as well as the direct impact on animal species, there are knock-on effects from this as well. So animal movement is linked to pollination and seed dispersal and soil turnover. So disrupting where animals are and where they're moving to can have a really negative impact throughout ecosystems. And, you know, some examples of this are, in Brisbane, you've got squirrel gliders that are living near roads and residential areas. They now have a smaller area that they move around in compared to those living in the interior or in bushland. Then you've got in central Victoria, you know, the daily movement distances of male, in particular mountain brush-tail possums, are 57% higher in populations living near roads compared to ones living in big forests. So this study is saying that it might be easier to reduce the impacts of disturbances on animals and where they can move by carefully managing certain activities that we do, like hunting or tourism, in wilderness areas, especially during animal breeding periods. And it can have a much bigger impact, even over things like deforestation or building and urbanisation, which I just assumed would have a much bigger impact. But it's all the little stuff, apparently.
A big story there today, Ray. Now we go from talking about animals relocating to planting the wrong trees. What can you tell us about this, sis?
Yeah, so a team of international scientists, that they say that planting the wrong trees in the wrong places can do more harm than good. Now, we know that tree planting is becoming a really important part of, you know, climate change mitigation, you know, trying to avoid climate change from getting even worse. But they've had to create what they call the 10 golden rules, a guide to tree planting. And, you know, these include things like protecting existing forest firsts and involving local communities at all stages so that you know what trees belong where, and picking the right sites to replant, you know, using the right seeds and a diversity of plants so that they all work together, and supporting more natural regeneration. Because there's no point in just going into an area and going, oh, yep, you know, we've got a few pine trees, we'll just whack them in over here, and then they just don't work in the local environment or ecosystem, and they can, you know, suffocate other trees and really stop those areas from being able to regenerate in a natural way where they all work together. And it was one of those things that didn't make sense to me when I read about it at first, and then it made perfect sense. You'd think all trees would be good, but not in the wrong place.
There you go, sis. I like that story. Now we go from trees to talking about a rather serious issue of alcohol policies in the Northern Territory. What can you tell me about this?
Yeah, we know that alcohol misuse is a really big contributor to the mortality rate in the Northern Territory. And this new study looks at all of the alcohol legislation reforms that came into effect in the Northern Territory in 2018. And this was part of the Northern Territory government's Alcohol Harm Minimisation Action Plan. And they included things like the minimum unit price for alcohol, so raising the cost of alcohol, and also that police auxiliary liquor inspection officers and the banned drinkers registrar. And they're all based on recommendations from the Riley Review for what they call an integrated alcohol harm reduction framework. So basically just a whole bunch of rules to try to stop the impacts of alcohol misuse in the Northern Territory. And they've found that the things that they've put into place have had a real effect on, in particular, critical health figures. So they've seen a 38% reduction in hospital intensive care unit admissions that have been associated with alcohol misuse.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's a huge amount. And they've seen a reduction in trauma admissions as well. And they did this study at Alice Springs Hospital ICU, which is a 10-bed unit. It's in Central Australia with around 600 admissions a year. And it's the only critical care facility for 1,500 kilometres in any direction. And it's looking after about 50,000 people living over 1 million square kilometres. So it covers a huge area, and approximately two-thirds of the patients there identify as Indigenous. And I think with this study, it's important to note as well that the intensive care unit outcomes, they're only one measure of the harm that can happen with alcohol. So further studies will need to look at things like crime statistics and road accident data as well. But to see that 38% reduction in intensive care unit admissions is just enormous, and really goes to show that the measures being put in place there, you know, by our communities as well, are really working, which is really good to hear.
A serious but very important issue that we've just spoken about there, Ray, and good to hear that good, positive things are being done up on country in Alice Springs. Now we go from talking about alcohol policies to beer, a subject which I like, if I'm allowed to admit that on the radio, sis.
I think you are. And this is, look, I love scientific experiments, so it's combining two things that we both love. And this is actually a really cool, really interesting story that it's a world first that we've discovered here in Australia. And what it is a PhD student has accidentally discovered a way to do really small-scale brewing experiments, and it could lead to better beer, but a whole bunch of other stuff as well. And it came about when a University of Queensland PhD candidate, his name's Edward Kerr, he hit a bit of a hurdle when he completed a beer brewing experiment for a big paper that he was writing. And he was looking at barley protein changes during the mashing stage of beer brewing.
Mm.
And one of the paper's reviewers asked if the changes were caused by temperature or by the time spent mashing the barley. And he didn't really write that down while he was doing it.
Oops.
But it was a good question. But he realized that to find out the answer to that question, he'd need to brew all this beer all over again with an instrument that would hold at least 23 liters of brew, you know, 5 kilos of malt for each brew, and it would have taken another 3 months.
Wow.
So he's admitted that he was feeling a little bit lazy, and decided to see if he could do the same experiment using one single barley seed and a 1.5 milliliter tube instead. Ooh. So instead of brewing like 100 liters of beer, he made a little test tube's worth, and it worked.
Wow, that's downsizing right there.
Right? Absolutely. So, you know, you've worked out that this new method, it could speed up quality testing of beer, you know, enormously. And they're also hoping to use this way of experimenting in chemical engineering courses now. So well done, Edward Kerr, wanting to brew beer quicker. So it's led to a new experiment method, which is great.
That's unreal. We can call him a beer scientist, yeah?
Absolutely. He is now a beer scientist. I don't think he can ever escape that.
Not a bad name to be called, I think, if you're a young man, if you're into that kind of thing. Now we go from beer to talking about quite an issue that has me concerned, sis. It's quite alarming to hear that the number of oceanic sharks and rays worldwide, their population has now fallen. Tell me more.
Yeah, they've actually fallen by 71% since 1970, which is just enormous. Now, this new study, it's found that more than 3/4 of oceanic shark and ray species, they're now threatened with extinction. And the risk of extinction to marine species is mostly caused by overfishing. We know what's causing it, but it's been really difficult to measure the decline of individual species.
Mm.
We've seen reductions in oceanic and coastal shark and ray populations in different regions all around the world documented, but a global analysis hasn't been available. And this is the first time that's happened, and we're seeing those global numbers coming in. Between 1970 and 2018, they looked at all 31 oceanic shark and ray species, and 71.1% is the number that's come back.
Wow.
That they've declined by. And of those 31 oceanic species, 24 are threatened with extinction. 3 shark species in particular, you've got the white tip shark, the scallop shark, and the great hammerhead shark. Their numbers have declined so sharply that they're now classified as critically endangered. And that is the highest threatened category in a list that's produced by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the IUCN. They make that list. Now, there has been an 18-time increase in what they call relative fishing pressure over that period of time.
What does that mean in English, sis?
Yeah, so that is, it's a measure of the number of sharks and rays caught in relation to their global population. So it just goes, this is how many sharks and rays have been caught.
Mm.
This is how many exist out in the wild. And they've seen 18 times more rays and sharks caught in that period of time compared to what's out there in the wild. And the researchers of this study are saying that we need immediate action to prevent absolute collapses in these populations. And specifically, they're calling on governments to put in place catch limits to help these species recover. We need to be limiting and stopping how many sharks and rays we're catching in commercial fishing. it's just absolutely devastating these species. And if it continues at this rate, we're just not going to have them in the future. So something needs to be done now.
That's really hard to believe that we won't have any oceanic sharks or rays in our waterways around the world. And quite a concern that numbers have fallen, as you just mentioned there, by 71% since 1970. A really important story to talk about, as well as the other topics that we've covered today. Thank you so much for your time again on NITV Radio, Ray.
No, thanks always for having me, Kerry Lee. It's great to be able to talk about these things and let people know.
Let's do it again next week, hey? I'll see you then.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Sis.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.